Heal Thyself, Using a Holistic Approach with Dr. Eric Madrid.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to today's podcast. It's actually an audio version of a speech that I gave today at Rancho Family Medical Group in Hemet, California. We discussed natural approaches to treating arthritis, and we hope you enjoy. Also, make sure you follow me on Instagram at EricMadridMD. I am also on Twitter and on Facebook. We post a lot of good things on those sites. And this is the first podcast I've done in a few weeks. I've had a lot going on, and hopefully I'll be putting out some more podcasts here over the next few weeks. So listen to today's show. I hope you find it useful. Share it with friends and family. And also, if you've not yet left us a review on Apple's podcast app, please go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. We always appreciate positive feedback. Thank you, and stay tuned. So today we're going to talk about arthritis. Right, arthritis obviously is something that a lot of us have. It's something that's pretty much inevitable, unfortunately. It just goes along with the aging process. It actually starts somewhere in the 40s, early 40s, where, and I'm 46 right now, so I'm starting to learn how this plays out as well, where, you know, the knees or the back or things sometimes, you know, are a little bit more stiffer than they used to be. And but usually as the day goes on, things, you know, get a little bit easier, generally, not always. Again, my background, I went to UCLA for undergraduate at, I have a bachelor's degree in microbiology and molecular genetics. Went to Ohio State for medical school, although I'm from Southern California. I did my residency at Whittier Presbyterian, and also we have medical students too. Some of you may have seen medical students when you come in. So most of the doctors here at Rancho Family are what we call adjunct clinical professors for UC Riverside School of Medicine and also Loma Linda, and we teach PA students and nurse practitioner students. I've been interested in alternative medicine, integrative medicine. It kind of goes by different names depending. Functional medicine. Primarily, you know, I had an aunt who was a nurse, and she used to own a health food store. So when I was in college, she would kind of teach me about certain things. And so I took an interest to that. And I think it's consistent with a lot of doctors in our goals in medicine is to help people and first do no harm and so on. So I figured if we can find ways to help people without, you know, minimizing, you know, risk and minimizing side effects for medications, and then we should take this approach. Obviously, I prescribe medications. I'm a doctor. I prescribe a lot of medicines because I have a lot of seniors, and seniors tend to take more medicines. So I do prescribe medicines. I'm not opposed to medicines, but I think if there's other alternatives or other things that we can try first, then that's going to be a great thing. Sometimes I've realized by using these other approaches, patients still need to be on a medicine prescription, but maybe instead of being on the high dose, we can be on the lowest dose and still accomplish the same goal. And like any medicine, the risk is, you know, it's always, you know, the poison's in the dose, basically, right? Any substance that's not normal or natural, you could even say to the human body, can be a poison in the right dose. Even water can be poison, right? If you drink 10 gallons of water a day, you're gonna have problems. So anything is can be harmful in the wrong dose. So the word arthritis comes from the Latin word arthron, which means joint, and itis means inflammation, right? So anytime, you know, we have itises, appendicitis, diverticulitis, rhinitis, in medicine, everything that ends in itis simply just means inflammation. In general, there's two main types of arthritis. We have, actually there's like three or four, but the main types are gonna be osteoarthritis, so bone inflammation, and then there's rheumatoid arthritis, which is a autoimmune disease. And the most common one is osteoarthritis, and that's the one that comes with age. Rheumatoid arthritis can occur in children, it can occur in our 20s, 30s, and that's due to an autoimmune condition in which the joints are attacked. There's also something called gouty arthritis as well, which, as the name implies, comes from gout. Symptoms include, and this is actually a photo that I took, this is a patient of mine here. But you can see, you know, the changes in the joints here and the bending. But arthritis symptoms generally are going to include joint pain, swelling, stiffness, redness, deformities, loss of function. And you'll see this in both rheumatoid and osteoarthritis. However, in rheumatoid arthritis, you might also have an unstable joint, severe joint swelling, fatigue, depression. With a lot of autoimmune diseases, there tends to be a lot of gut issues. And that's, so not just with rheumatoid arthritis, but whether it's lupus or psoriasis and other autoimmune conditions, you tend to have gut issues. And there's a reason for that, because about 80% of our immune system is in our gut. So that's another talk about the gut and gut health, but 80% of our immune system is in the gut. So when the gut's not healthy, then it can manifest itself in many ways. And then with rheumatoid arthritis, you will also have elevated markers of inflammation, something called C-reactive protein, and another test that sometimes we order called a sed rate. So conventional therapy for arthritis, right, will include Tylenol or acetaminophen, also known as paracetamol around the world. So if you go to Europe or something and you ask them for Tylenol or acetaminophen, they may not know what you're talking about. Well, maybe if you say Tylenol, they will. But if you ask for paracetamol, that's what they call it all around the world. That's usually a first line. While helpful for some, you know, a lot of times it doesn't take care of the job. And plus, it has to be metabolized through the liver. So daily Tylenol use can put a little extra stress on the liver. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, NSAIDs. And these include ibuprofen, known as Motrin, Advil, naproxen, diclofenac, indomethacin, celecoxib. So these are probably the ones that most of us are familiar with, and this is the ones that a lot of times us physicians will prescribe, or perhaps you'll even purchase over the counter, and that will help with inflammation reduction, but they're not without their risk, and we'll go into that as well, right? Because these class of meds, the NSAIDs, can increase risk of kidney disease, believe it or not. So if you have kidney disease, you may have been told to avoid NSAIDs or avoid ibuprofen. They can increase risk for heart attacks and strokes and so on. So again, we'll go into that. But the FDA has what's called a black box warning. And matter of fact, if you buy ibuprofen over the counter at the supermarket, you know, it has a real small writing on the back. No one, you know, very few people can see it unless you're 18. But they have what's called a black box warning. So the FDA strengthens warning of heart attack and stroke risk for non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. Now, it doesn't mean you should absolutely never use them, but again, it comes back to trying to use the least amount possible, and we're going to, again, discuss how we can try to get to that least amount possible. If you have questions along the way, too, just let me know, and we can do that as well. So this is what the black box warning says for NSAIDs. NSAIDs may cause an increased risk of serious cardiovascular thrombotic, which are clots, thrombotic events, myocardial infarction, heart attack, and stroke, which can be fatal. This risk may increase with the duration of use. Patients with cardiovascular disease or risk factors for cardiovascular disease may be at greater risk. For the gastrointestinal system, NSAIDs cause an increased risk of serious gastrointestinal adverse events, including bleeding, ulceration, perforation of the stomach or intestines, which can be fatal. These events can occur anytime during the use and without warning. Elderly patients are at greater risk for serious gastrointestinal symptoms. So again, I think, you know, I'm not telling you not to take these medications, but again, the goal is to try to, because for some, they can be life-saving. It can mean the difference between, I'm going to sit here in this bed, I'm going to sit here in this couch all day, versus I'm going to get up and go shopping, I'm going to go hang out with the family, we're going to go to a movie, we're going to go to a restaurant. So for some, they're very necessary. But again, we may be able to help reduce the amount that you need and the duration for which it's taken and still achieve similar benefits without increasing your risk. Do you guys remember Vioxx back in the late 90s? Was anyone on it by any chance? Everyone ever take it, if you want to admit? Right? Vioxx? So Vioxx is a cousin to Celebrex, and it was pulled off the market in 2004. I was in residency at the time. It's an NSAID manufactured by Merck. It was on the market from 1998 to 2004. It was pulled by the FDA. The FDA claims there was almost 28,000 deaths from this drug in 6 years. In the United States alone, almost 28,000 deaths. And these were due to heart attacks and strokes. Other sources claim there are 55,000 deaths. Okay, so again, to put this in comparison, in Vietnam, I think we lost 53,000 soldiers in Vietnam in a 14-year war, something like that. So we lost 55,000 Americans in 6 years from this medication. And Merck ended up settling for $4.85 billion, which is relatively low, obviously, because that's probably a one quarter worth of income. And again, Korea also 54,000. I have them down here. Yeah, so Vietnam 58,000, Korea 54,000. Other treatments that we use are topical pain medications. So these might be a safer option. So these include medications like diclofenac gel, which could be placed directly on a joint. And even though it's a NSAID, it's an NSAID, and it will officially have to carry that same risk just because of the class that it's in, it does not have that same risk in practicality because it's only going to be applied on the joint or on the shoulder or wherever the pain is. And so, again, the label will still have black box warnings, but most of the medication is going to be right in the joint itself, and it's not going to be systemically absorbed to any large degree that it would, you know, increase your risk for certain conditions. This was a picture that we took. I'm going to break these up with some photos here too. But this was a picture of a trip that I went on to the Philippines back in September of last year. So this is Dr. N, Dr. Rome Walter on the far end, myself. These are all Rancho employees here. Charles is one of our scribes who's going off to PA school, so he'll be a future physician assistant in a few years, probably working with Rancho family and then the kids over in the Philippines. All right, other options. So opiates are another option for pain relief, right? But again, we've heard about these. They've been in the news, and these include codeine, tramadol. So in strength, you know, from weakest to strongest, it would be codeine, tramadol, hydrocodone, which is the active ingredient in Norco, used to be called Vicodin. Oxycodone should be over. Actually, no, it's probably right. Morphine, oxycodone, and these are derived from the opium poppies. Overuse of narcotics or opiates is an epidemic, right? And it's estimated up to 30,000 people die each year in the United States just from overdoses, both accidental and purposeful. When used for the short term, they can be very helpful, but they can be very addictive in those with addictive personalities too, right? So not everybody has an addictive personality. So again, we have to kind of, you know, but if we give the medications to 10 people and we're liberal with it and we're not cautious, potentially one out of those 10 people will say, hey, I like this. I like the way it makes me feel. And I think I'm just going to tell the doctor I have back pain and I need this medicine every day for the rest of my life. And there's other people who say, you know what, I have some back pain, I took it, it worked great, and it sits in the cabinet for a couple of years and it expires or something. You know, so again, it doesn't mean that if you take it, you're gonna get hooked. There's, again, certain personality types that do make one more at risk to become addicted. But in either case, we need to be careful in the way we prescribe these as well, because they can cause issues. And it should only be used as a last resort. Again, so these are drugs involved in U.S. overdose deaths. So synthetic opiates would again be the prescription drugs, 30,000, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine. I mean, so all these combined are, you know, maybe a little bit more than this. But again, we're, you know, as a culture, we tend to be almost more worried about the illegal drugs than the legal drugs. So I think we need to be cautious. We can do joint injections, for example, in arthritis. And we can use steroids, or sometimes we use something called hyaluronic acid, and this is a substance that comes from chicken combs. The cost of this steroid shot is less than $200. And again, it can be very helpful because it frequently can provide benefit for 3 months, 6 months, even a year, So that's not bad. It can, again, restore a lot of mobility to people and use of limbs. And some people, that's not enough, and then they'll do the hyaluronic acid, and those three shots usually cost about $1,300 combined. And again, that can also be helpful. A lot of times these are done prior to, or when a person is maybe considering surgery or a knee replacement. A lot of times the orthopedic doctor, or the primary doctor will usually inject the steroids. The orthopedic doctor can also do that, or they'll inject this other stuff as a way of trying to buy a person time or trying to, hopefully prevent surgery. But sometimes it's necessary. Let's talk about rheumatoid arthritis. Again, the treatment for that is going to be similar. Again, NSAIDs, but their risk, Tylenol. There's medications called DMARD, which stands for disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs. So this would include like methotrexate and sulfasalazine. And there's medicines called biologics. We're not going to go into all these in detail, but again, these medicines were approved in 2008. These drugs work amazingly. Does anyone know anybody or want to admit with rheumatoid arthritis or anyone who's been on some of these biologics?
Yeah.
I mean, they can be life-changing. I mean, a person could literally not be able to walk, not be able to make a fist, and within a week or two of getting these medications, they're walking, they're able to open jars. So they could be very life-saving in many cases.
Friend was on methotrexate.
Methotrexate,
yeah. Yeah, and she lost her vision. I think.
Oh, did she? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, I've never seen that as a side effect, vision loss. But again, it can happen, right? And these are those things. So, I guess if you have 100% chance of not being able to walk, of 1% chance of walking and possibly losing your vision, most people would say, I want to take that chance. But unfortunately, if the side effect happens to you, then it's not good. And they each work different ways. Now these medications, they call them again biosimilar drugs for rheumatoid arthritis, but these can be very effective, but they cost more than $14,000 annually. Not the methotrexate, but some of the infusion ones. $14,000 annually is the cost. And matter of fact, these drugs rank among the top 15 drugs by Medicare expenditures. So they represent only about 2% of the overall prescriptions, but account for 38% of the U.S. drug spending in 2015 and 70% of drug spending growth from 2010 to 2015. So again, there's all this talk about Medicare going broke and so on. So I guess the question is, who's to blame? Well, drug companies perhaps. I mean, a lot of times these drugs are a lot less expensive in other countries, but because a lot of the bureaucracy and red tape we have here in the United States, the costs go up considerably, sometimes double or triple what they might cost even in Canada. Don't tell me to improve my diet. I ate a carrot once and nothing happened. So that's how some people are sometimes. So the question is, now that I've scared you, no one ever wants to take a prescription drug ever again. You're going to go home. Don't do that. You're going to go home and be tempted to throw it down the toilet. Don't do that. But is there another option? And I think there is. We call it a pharmacy approach. Okay. So there's evidence, and I have studies here, I have references, even on the paper handout that you have, and at the end of this, I have references. So a lot of this stuff, again, isn't stuff necessarily we're going to hear in the mainstream media. We're not going to even frequently hear it from physicians, because this is not stuff that we're generally taught in medical school. But it's out there if one looks. So consuming a primarily plant-based diet is the best for reducing chronic inflammation and pain in the joints. I'm not a vegetarian, and I'm not recommending, people necessarily be vegetarians if you're not. But again, primarily a plant-based. So most of us would have, maybe a side salad, whereas maybe the salad should be the main meal, and so on. Studies demonstrate that a Mediterranean diet can be helpful in reducing joint pain and inflammation. A study in The Lancet showed that when patients went on a vegan, now this can be tough, obviously, went on a vegan gluten-free diet for 3 to 5 months and then switched to a lacto-vegetarian. So a vegan is a vegetarian who does not eat eggs and dairy products. But then switch to a lacto-vegetarian, so milk and egg diet, significantly reduced joint pain for up to a year. again, vegetarian diet, high intake of fresh fruits and vegetables due to their high antioxidant levels, and even therapeutic fasting as well. So by therapeutic fasting, it may be, and we've spoken before on fasting, but a therapeutic fast might be a 24-hour fast, a 72-hour fast, perhaps, even a 5-day fast. And that's not something one just wakes up one day and says, I'm not going to eat for 3 days. It's something one has to build up to. And psychologically, it's probably the hardest, more so than physically. And of course, don't do that without consulting with your physician. I always have to put those disclaimers in there, especially if you're on certain medications, because, you know, people with diabetes, for example, if you don't eat, your blood sugar could drop and so on. So anyway, but a lot of times just avoiding food and fasting can be beneficial. And the reason being, because it gives the digestive system a break. And a lot of the inflammation that ends up occurring within our bodies starts in our gut. And that inflammation then gets, you know, those inflammatory proteins get absorbed into our blood system and can cause inflammation. So that's why it can be helpful. Again, nutritional approach, limiting animal-based products such as beef, chicken, helps reduce the pain. Now, obviously, this is completely counter to what I've been saying on a ketogenic diet. This is what the studies are showing. My take on it, though, too, is that it might not so much be the beef and the chicken. It might be the chemicals and hormones that are in the beef and chicken. So, again, you know, if that's something that you enjoy eating, that's fine. But maybe consider more the free-range chicken, more the grass-fed, hormone-free beef. That, you know, so I think that's my twist on it, at least. Avoiding sugars and trans fats can be helpful. So, again, just reducing sugars and processed foods, pastries, desserts, all these things, because sugar can cause inflammation. So if you think about, pain is equal to inflammation. So pain equals inflammation. Sugar causes inflammation. So sugar causes inflammation, which causes pain. So one approach is literally just reducing the amount of sugar and inflammation in the foods that are going to cause inflammation in our body. Reaching our optimal weight can be a big advantage as well, because this takes a lot of pressure off of the joints. And there was even a study I came across that says diet, you know, a high plant-based diet could help prevent rheumatoid arthritis from developing. So again, these are just some studies to kind of back up what I was saying. Here is a study in the Autoimmune Review from November of 2018. The Mediterranean diet, rich in plant-based foods such as whole grains, legumes, fruits, vegetables, extra virgin olive oil, low in red meat consumption, may have the potential to reduce the risk of rheumatoid arthritis. Based on current research evidence, it is suggested that adherence to the Mediterranean diet, and enhanced with an increased consumption of fatty fish, reduced consumption of sugar-sweetened drinks, and maintenance of normal body weight, contributes to preventing rheumatoid arthritis. Here's another study that I came across, shows that blueberries and spinach, right, you can make a great smoothie. Blueberries and spinach were foods most often reported to improve rheumatoid arthritis symptoms. And again, I think this would be similar for osteoarthritis as well. So even if you don't have rheumatoid arthritis, this would still be very applicable. So blueberries and spinach were the foods most often reported to improve rheumatoid arthritis symptoms, while soda with sugar and desserts were those most often reported to worsen the symptoms of inflammation. Take one a day with a tomato and a cucumber. So again, and this is my, I think as I see a lot of these medical students rotating with me, physician assistant students, nurse practitioner students, to them it's a very common sense approach now. It's kind of refreshing to me to sit here and for these students to say, well, of course eating bad is gonna give you more diseases, or of course eating good is gonna help prevent diseases. Yes?
I've read something recently that Stanford is starting to require students to take cooking classes and teach them how to cook, so when they Excellent. Go into clinic that they're kind of chefs as well as
right.
taking that nutritional approach.
Yeah, and so there's definitely, I think, a big paradigm shift, because I think if you ask most doctors what's the number one cause of chronic disease, you know, they would admit that it's going to be diet. But then when you ask the same doctor, what diet do you recommend, they say, I have no idea, go see a nutritionist. So again, so we can easily admit that poor diet and lifestyle are a large contributor to blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, macular degeneration, right, which is associated with low intake of antioxidants, which is another way of saying we didn't eat enough fruits and vegetables, you know, when we were younger. So now it puts us at risk for macular degeneration. So I think most doctors can freely admit that diet is a big cause of it, but yet there's a big disconnect. I mean, so here's the number one cause of healthcare's problems is diet and nutrition. And then the so-called experts in healthcare have very little knowledge on diet and nutrition. So there's a big disconnect, but again, there is a shift, and that's happening, and that's a good thing. Let's see, fruits and vegetables contain phytonutrients, which can help reduce inflammation. Aim for 5 to 9 servings per day. I have whole grains and a question mark because some people's pain can be made worse by grains, right? I've seen this, gluten and so on, gluten-containing foods, and it might just be more. I've had patients tell me that when they eat grains and breads and pastas, their joints hurt. But I've now had 2 patients who've traveled to Europe, and when they ate grains over there and bread and pasta, that their joints didn't hurt. So again, I only have 2 people who've told me this, but I think it might be the way we make things here. It might be due to genetically modified foods and so on. But that's, I have a question mark there. Some people can be sensitive to nightshades as well, right? Which are tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant, tobacco. So again, another thing I came across, another study said that may be more of a myth. But again, really what it comes down to is we have to kind of experiment on ourselves. You know, if you have a lot of pains, maybe, you know, eliminate certain foods for a while, eliminate grains for a week and see if you feel better. Eliminate potatoes, tomatoes, eggplants, or nightshades for a while and then see how you feel and then bring them back in. And you'll know, because if you're sensitive to potatoes and that actually makes your pain worse, while not eating them for a week or two, you'll feel fine, and then you'll eat them, and then you may notice you have joint pain. But again, if you're not looking for it, you may not ever make that connection either. So just kind of be in tune with your body. Maybe keep a food journal for a while and kind of say, hey, what did I eat? Because the reaction might be 12 hours later, it might be 24 hours later. You might have pain tonight in your knees and not realize it was that baked potato the night before for dinner. And if you're not keeping a food journal, you may not see that pattern. And again, yeah, so some consider a 2-week elimination diet to see if these foods are associated with pain. Other therapies, acupuncture, qigong, mindfulness, meditation, tai chi, yoga have also been shown to be helpful. All right, so let's talk about supplements now. Because when all said and done, this is kind of one of the easier things to do, because we are a pill popping, you know, society. And let's face it, you know, if you had to cook for an hour or take a supplement, I mean, most of us would say, give me the supplement, right? But I just wanted to make sure I painted a kind of a whole picture, a complete picture. So turmeric, has anyone taken turmeric before? Turmeric, okay. So turmeric is one that I've used a lot for patients. I've used it myself. I've recommended it to family members. Studies show that this can be helpful in reducing pain for both rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis. And the research has shown that it actually works similarly to a lot of the prescription drugs like ibuprofen and naproxen and so on, and even some of the biologics for rheumatoid arthritis, that it basically reduces pro-inflammatory chemicals. So again, inflammation causes pain, so if we can reduce the chemicals, the inflammatory chemicals, we'll have less pain. And then it also does blocks chemicals, what are called COX-2, which is stands for cyclooxygenase 2, it's an enzyme. And this is what medicines like Celebrex do, and ibuprofen, and then also 5-LOX. So again, turmeric is a very good supplement to take. There's potentially a bleeding risk. I just have to throw that out there. So if you're on a blood thinner, potentially there's a bleeding risk. I couldn't find any evidence of it anywhere in the studies. It may just be a medical myth that's been passed on, but I just have to throw that out there. So, you know, at that point, maybe starting at a lower dose. And I'll go over the doses here as well. So again, this is a rheumatoid arthritis. The results indicate a study on rheumatoid arthritis from 2017 show that curcumin and a turmeric. So turmeric is the herb. The active ingredient in turmeric is curcumin, which is where we get the word curry. For a lot of Indian food has curry. It gives it the orange color. So this study showed that curcumin in a turmeric matrix or mixture acts as an analgesic, so pain medicine, and anti-inflammatory agent for the management of rheumatoid arthritis. And here was, does turmeric alleviate osteoarthritis symptoms in adults? This was evidence-based practice journal. And the answer was yes. Turmeric improves knee arthritis pain slightly more than placebo, an effect similar to ibuprofen, diclofenac, and glucosamine. So they're saying basically it's just as good as ibuprofen. Some people will add something else called boswellia. It's another herb. Boswellia may also be as effective as Salabrex or salicoxib for improving knee arthritis. So again, these are two supplements. So turmeric and boswellia are two supplements that are similar to ibuprofen, similar to Salabrex in reducing joint pain. So again, if you're taking those medicines, you may be able to take them less often or avoid them altogether by simply adding turmeric and boswellia to your mixture. Omega-3 fish oil is another one. Fish oil usually 500 milligrams at least, maybe up to 2,000 milligrams per day. Fish oils is an essential fatty acid that helps to improve pain and reduce use of NSAIDs. It can reduce joint stiffness, and it can also be consumed as, in your diet as well. So eating fish a couple times a week can be helpful. And also there's something called a GLA, gamma-linolenic acid, that sometimes can be taken with fish oil. And this would include like evening primrose oil, black currant oil, or barrage oil. So again, these are essential fatty acids that have the ability to reduce inflammation in the body. This was a study, Annals of Rheumatic Disease, on fish oil. And it just shows that omega-3 fish oil leads to clinically and statistically significant improvement in rheumatoid arthritis. Nigella sativa is another supplement that can be also known as black cumin seed oil. And this herb has been shown to reduce inflammation in both rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis. And again, here's a study that concluded that the pain relieving properties of black cumin seed oil is effective on geriatric individuals living with knee pain. Boswellia, we mentioned earlier. So on that herb, it's usually going to be about 50 milligrams per day. Help reduces pain. Ginger is another one that can be taken, again, either as a food or in a supplement. At 25 milligrams per day can also help reduce inflammation and osteoarthritis pain. To go back on the turmeric as well, the dose that I usually recommend is about 500 milligrams of turmeric, up to three times a day. So you can kind of take it as an ibuprofen if you wanted to, breakfast, lunch, dinner, or maybe just take 500 milligrams in the morning, see how it goes. Yes, question.
While you're mentioning food, should you take your supplements at mealtime so that you're not just putting all these herbs on your empty stomach and causing maybe an irritation?
Yeah, you can. I mean, most of them you can also take on an empty stomach, but it's okay to take with food as well. So I think
that's like six on the list, but
right, yeah, that can be problematic. Yeah, or you can split them up
through the day.
Yeah,
different meals.
Exactly. And again, here was a study showed the combination of curcumin or turmeric and boswellia, and they suggested here that that curcumin and boswellia formulations could be a valuable addition to knee arthritis treatment regimens by relieving symptoms while reducing safety risk. So again, this goes back to, you might still need to take an ibuprofen, but maybe instead of taking two a day, you take two a week, and you're using this instead. Another study on the effects of ginger extract on knee pain. They concluded a highly purified and standardized ginger extract had a significant effect on reducing symptoms of osteoarthritis of the knee. The effect was moderate. There was a good safety profile with mostly mild gastrointestinal adverse effects. So it might cause a little bit of dyspepsia or indigestion. Let's see, massage. So this was a study I found on self-knee massage with ginger oil. So again, you can use a topical, like an essential oil, essentially, and rub that into the affected joint, and there may be some benefit there as well. Additional supplements to consider, again, and glucosamine chondroitin I think that's been hit or miss. Has anyone taken that? Did it work? Or it's kind of 50-50 what I've noticed. Some people, it works. If it works, keep taking it. If it doesn't work, stop taking it. And again, it's like medications, I think, too. You know, some medicines work for people, some medicines don't. Everyone is so unique, so individual. You know, but I find that we do have a double standard in medicine, right? Because if I give you ibuprofen and it doesn't work, then I switch you to naproxen or Aleve, and that may work. And but yet the doctor would still prescribe ibuprofen to other people, but we kind of have a double standard because generally speaking, if a doctor gave one person, or if a doctor heard, like, hey, I had a patient that had knee pain, they took turmeric, it didn't work. So all that stuff is, you know, is junk science, or there's no evidence. And so that doctor would never recommend it ever again based on one negative reaction, whereas we never do that with medicines. So again, we have to realize that, you know, these herbs here, it might be, there might be two that work for you, but they have absolutely no effect for you, and a completely different one or two that work for you. And this is what we have to simply kind of self-experiment on ourselves to a degree to find out what works best. And then by, you know, changing diet around, and gluten might cause your knee pain, but it might not cause any problems for you whatsoever. And this is what we just have to all, you know, one size does not fit all when it comes to this approach. SAMe is another supplement that can be helpful in lowering pain associated with arthritis. That's usually going to be about 400 milligrams, 2 to 3 times per day. And then bromelain is another one that can be beneficial, and that comes from pineapples. So some of you may have heard this story, but when I was in medical school, I had a patient with rheumatoid arthritis. He was in his 40s, and he was admitted for, I forgot what it was now, but he was admitted for some other medical issue. But he asked if we could get him a can of pineapples every day while he was in the hospital. And I thought that was a weird request. And I asked him why, and he said because he's been doing it for years and it helps to keep his rheumatoid arthritis pain controlled. And of course, I'm in med school, so we learn very little about nutrition. And so I just kind of thought this, at first I thought, well, maybe it's a placebo effect. You know, there's probably nothing to back this up, but I'm curious, so I'm gonna go look it up. So I did some research, and sure enough, it has the active ingredient called bromelain, which again has a similar mechanism of action as ibuprofen and Aleve, naproxen, and so on. So he had figured out through his own dietary habits that certain foods helped reduce his pain. So, and I'm sure I could guarantee probably, you know, if he told that to 100 doctors, 95 would say he was crazy, and 5 might sit there and say, I wonder if there's anything to this, right? So. Chondroitin and glucosamine, again, this study shows that it's equal to Celebrex or celecoxib. So again, it works for some people, not for others. It's just the way it is. This was the one for the pineapple extract, bromelain. This was a 16-week study that showed improvement in pain when compared to the baseline. The patients given diclofenac, the prescription had adverse effects leading to discontinuation of use. At week 16 of the bromelain treatment, the patients had improved pain scores and so on. So anyway, so that, again, that's something else to consider. Additional supplements to consider is white willow bark, used by Native Americans for pain and fever. It has salicin in it, which is the extract for acids, salicylic acid. Again, don't take this one if you're on aspirin or other anti-inflammatories, because that does have a bleeding additive risk. Vitamin D as well can be helpful, and even probiotics as well. It goes back to the gut. So keeping the gut healthy, probiotics and studies have been shown to reduce symptoms, at least of rheumatoid arthritis as well.